time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Free Nelson Mandela. Free. 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 Free Nelson Mandela.
The only thing we can go into today is quite simply free, free Duchess Meghan. Oh yeah, oh yeah, free, free Duchess Meghan. I'm telling you, free, 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 free Duchess Meghan. Yes, well, I think the word is coming out that clearly she has to actually receive some sort of freedom. I mean, she's had the long walk to freedom, the cry freedom. It's just what, I mean, Richard Fitzwilliams, you must come around and with your royal correspondence hat on. So, I mean, it's brought out my inner panda straight away in terms of this. So let's talk us through this whole process.
Well, I mean, talking us through a process which involves Understanding Megan's state of mind is something that, yes, indeed, it's something that is actually quite a feat. We have to firstly just set the context for listeners, because what we're dealing with, to begin with, there's a spot. Megan and Harry have deals with Netflix and Spotify. The deal with Netflix almost certainly is the reason they're coming over, ostensibly for two charitable functions to Britain and one in Germany next week. However, the facts simply are that she has done a podcast with Serena Williams, her new best friend, and also with Mariah Carey. They appear to have shot to number one or not, depending on what you interpret from the way they've used statistics. But the fact of the matter, and what Alex is specifically referring to, is an interview in The Cut, which was frankly unbelievable, The Cut being a New York magazine.
The Lion King producer said, he said.
Alex, I'm coming there, just painting a little background for those who haven't necessarily followed this. It's 6,400 words, and it can only be said that it is an extraordinary insight into the mind of somebody who believes, for example, that this is the Lion King issue. At the premiere of the Lion King, this was some 3 years ago, or 2.5 years ago, Meghan and Harry, he was mentioning to the head of Disney that she'd do voiceovers, and she subsequently did one for elephants. But also, and much more relevant, in the interview, it actually stated that a member of the cast from South Africa, there was only one member of the cast from South Africa, Dr. John Carney, and he wasn't at the premiere. But that aside, and the fact the South African composer who was certainly has no recollection of this conversation, she was told that her marriage to Harry caused celebrations in South Africa in the streets comparable to the release of Nelson Mandela.
Free, 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 free Duchess Meghan.
It is a weird thing. And also, I would point out that the interview is strange. For example, there's a very, very clear, to me, it's been denied, very, very clear, where Harry tells Meghan, was quoted as telling Meghan, that he lost his dad through this process. And she has switched the meaning of this to the fact that she
I
lost
wasn't
her.
aware Prince Charles had passed away, Richard. Is this news? I mean, are you saying that there's an imposter in the position of the next heir to the throne?
Alex, I attempt to make sense of what, to me, is an absolutely dreadful mess. The interview is a complete. If she even says, for example, that just by existing, they pose a threat to the royal family, or words to that effect. She then says that she didn't sign a non-disclosure agreement, which those, by the way, who claim that she bullied them did. So she obviously could speak out. I can say anything. I mean, you wonder what she's trying to achieve.
Richard, you're not suggesting she's a bit of a diva, are you, Richard? I mean, Mariah Carey certainly sort of said she was, and that created no end of problems, really.
Mariah Carey has subsequently clarified that she meant it. This was in the podcast, and Megan said she squirmed in her chair. Mariah Carey has subsequently said that she meant it in the nicest possible way. Obviously, she was being playful. Remember that Megan only has her best friends on podcasting.
As I said, that's why the specials need to re-release Free Nelson Mandela and say, after 21 months of captivity, free, 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 free Duchess Meghan. Don't you think so, Sarah Huntley?
No, I just think the whole thing stinks, quite honestly. She's just one of those people. Sorry, I'm probably going to be hit by a thunderbolt in Foy in Cornwall. She's just somebody that likes stirring up trouble, and she's manipulating
Are
the
you saying she's a
existence of death.
narcissist, Sarah?
I think she is, yes. And I
No.
think whatever walk of life she is in, and I just feel, oh goodness me. I just wouldn't, as I said, I would not give her the time of day. She's probably loving the controversy this is all causing. And if I were a friend of hers, which I wouldn't be, I wouldn't go on one of these podcasts because is just as ridiculous. There's too much else going on in the world to worry about Meghan and what she thinks. We're not interested. Please go away and let's get on with the real things that matter. That's how I look at it.
I mean, Kayleigh Mansour, are you now going to actually rescind your invitation to appear on the third Meghan Markle podcast, Archetypes, as a result of this? I mean, what's the view down on the street, so to speak?
Yeah, it's going to be awkward now when I speak to her and tell her that you guys have been saying these things about her. So I don't think I can attend, no.
I've been saying nothing. I mean, I've been saying free Duchess Meghan. I got my invitation intact.
Yeah, you can be my plus one, Alex. No worries. Oh, we're not infringed. We're fine. I completely agree with Sarah. I just think that the world has much bigger issues and much bigger just events to fixate on than Meghan. It feels like it happened so long ago and yet it's still prevalent with us today. She's continuing to make herself relevant in any way she can, even if that's through controversy. So yeah, I'm not engaging with it. Well,
I was particularly impressed at how she channels the spirit of Princess Diana in the outfit she's been recently wearing. So that's nice as well to ensure that there's fondness there. I mean, I think maybe she's just gone rogue. She's actually had this system where effectively she's met somebody, possibly, you know, Prince Harry, and she's been taken on to a whole new level of experience. And now we actually need to take her away from the wicked Windsors and actually ensure that she's back saving the world, which is obviously what she was made to actually do. No kind of rogue agent whatsoever, Richard. Isn't that so?
You'll probably never hear this message. It's important that you know that you haven't broken me. There's a trick that spies use. If you want to make an instant connection with someone, look into their eyes just long enough to register their eye colour.
Hi.
He said it works every time.
In case you want to buy a car or have dinner. My real name is Robert Freeguard. I am an officer in the British Security Services, MI5.
Check with our colleagues in security services.
He's not one of theirs.
Robert Freeguard. The allegation was for stalking and harassment of a young woman.
Sophie.
Where are we?
One last mission.
Robert Freeguard has kidnapped my daughter.
Stay in this postcode. Someone will find you here and take you to the program.
Do you believe in God and the devil? Some people have been put on this earth to be the agents of one or the other. Robert Freeguard is such an agent, and he's not the Lord's.
I need you to help me find him.
We work together.
We have just one shot at this.
So go on then. What are you hiding?
He never, ever stops.
The number you have dialed has not been recognized. Please check and dial again.
We need to find him.
Well, it's certainly an extraordinary state of mind, and also the fact that she believes she controls the narrative, and anyone who doesn't fit into that narrative, she attacks. I mean, I don't understand why specifically, apart from Netflix, she would come over to Britain. There are the charitable functions, of course, but on the other hand, their popularity, both of them, is an all-time low. There's, of course, the rift with the royal family. They and the most of the press hate each other. They may be controversial when they're here. So I can only say it's, yes, she had the Sussex. It did go rogue. Yes.
Meghan Markle, Robert Freeguard. could be one of the same if they're looking to actually manipulate folk and actually panic them into oh so many ways.
Alex, I do think we have to be careful for legal reasons, and a comparison quite as drastic as you have just made.
It's a segue to another individual, another member of the human race. He's out and about there now. We don't know where he is, but he is, spoilers. And in terms of that whole sequence, it brings us around to a movie which I suspect, rather like myself, Richard, we might be in agreement with this. It's probably a 6.5 to a 7. For me, it's a 6.5 because Gemma Arterton really doesn't need to drop the F-bomb as many times as she does. She's actually the only member of the cast, apart from one male, who actually drops the F-bomb. And really, Gemma, stop that vulgarity. Stop that profanity. You don't need it. And that the movie would have been a lot better without it. Anyway, over to you, Richard.
I have to say, I came to this movie pretty blind. I found it rather fascinating because, as you have mentioned, and it's not really a spoiler because it's pretty obvious from quite early on, not the first scenes, no. I mean, we're set in the 1990s and where the IRA caused a carrier out of terror campaign, in England, MI5 was starting to recruit to counter this. And one of the things...
I've already counselled Kayleigh that if any person approaches her while she's at the University of Lincoln and wants to sign her up for MI5, the word is no. Okay, that's all.
I would say, Kayleigh, be careful, especially if fertilizer comes into it, because, of course, that's the way you can make, or apparently you can make bombs. But we meet Freegard, Robert Henley Freegard, played by James Norton, when he befriends several students, and he says he was a British intelligence officer, and what happens is he grooms them for his own purposes. We don't discover that initially, but it becomes clear, and you see the way all his victims are held in thrall because, firstly, they're asked to spy on a fellow student, and then subsequently all three of them are spirited away because he says their cover's blown. So
I wouldn't buy a used car from him.
It has to be said, Alex, he, of course, one of the keys, and I think James Norton is very good in the role, is he is so devilishly persuasive. So, in fact, whereas you obviously wouldn't wish to, if you were face-to-face with him, this one notices it's quite interesting in the film when he has the face-to-face encounters with Alice Archer, which is Gemma Arterton's character, how diabolically persuasive he appears to be. We know, and by that time it's clear what sort of a character he is. And he grooms Sophie, played by Marisa Abella. She has to go through an endless series of tests. He's abusing her at the same time. It's a truly tragic case. It's a form of kidnapping, of course. There's also a guy, Ian, and then there is someone we must not discuss too much, May, the third student. There are surprises in this movie, directed by Declan Morn and Adam Patterson, and well acted because Morton is pretty diabolically persuasive, whereas when he takes on, appears to be a salesman, of a car salesman, and meets Alice, played by Gemma Arterton, they have an affair, she falls in love, and then he treats her very badly, particularly when he visits her parents and they've been talking about starting a new job, and he continues the thought. They, in fact, have a joint bank.
If you're going to have a bit of financial abuse and take £100,000 out of account, you've got to actually have a certain amount of slickness and panache to it, surely.
Will the slickness and panache do it apparently involved getting Sophie to masquerade as Alice and fooling the bank. This movie, and also there's Jenny, played by Sarah Goldberg, American, and with parents who are wealthy. There are a variety of surprises, major and minor, in this film, and it is interesting, and it is also diabolical because, as you mentioned, he is now no longer in custody. Let's not go further into that, other than to say that it's positively wicked. It's almost rather like a cases where there were stalkers, and women until relatively recently had almost no legal protections at all.
Mad, bad, or sad. The three classic lines, as we're told in the whole thing: sad, mad, or bad. stereotypes are not good.
And it's all, yeah, it's also a fascinating story. So I got quite drawn into this. I mean, I'm not saying it's a great film, and I like Gemma Arterton. There were echoes here of the disappearance of Alex Creed, where she was.
Her name, for instance.
Her name, Alice Archer?
Yes, Alice Creed, Alice Archer. We see the connection.
Well, not much of a connection, really, but nonetheless, no, I mean, I between 7 and 8, I was hovering on the exact mark for this. It is a study of an individual and the diabolical complexities of, and the way, in fact, individuals can be drawn in by someone who has sinister intent. They're very good performances, I have to say, from all the cast. Marisa Abella, particularly.
Except for Gemma's potty mouth. She didn't need it. It needed to be expunged from the movie.
I didn't notice. It just seemed to be part and parcel.
12! I stopped the tally card after I'd actually reached a dozen of them.
I didn't. Well, as I say, I mean, the character may well, some people do. The facts simply are, however.
It was almost though she was a criminal lawyer with Tourette syndrome. It just lost her half a point.
Well, what she did was also take on someone who was a positively diabolical individual. But I think it's rather well cast, and I'm inclined to put between 7 and 8, maybe 8, simply because I enjoyed it very much, because it's an unusual film, and you are left with the sinister fact that a character like this could be anywhere.
And to be fair, it is on Netflix, of course, your favourite of all our platforms to actually watch movies on, Richard. Sarah, what about yourself? Have you seen it? Is it one that you're going to check out? Is it a case of, oh, here I am in Foy, should I actually see this about a chap who's still at large? What are we going to do?
Oh, no, I think I will tune in. I agree with Richard because I watched the trailer and you want to know this backstory. And the trailer does do that very well. You want to know what's going to happen. So, yes, I would definitely watch this. Yes.
Okay. Kaylee, I think you may already have actually seen this, in which case you could probably give a score. So what are your thoughts on this whole process?
Yeah, I thought the concept was really interesting, but I wasn't wowed by the film itself. I don't know if it was the acting or just some things were quite ridiculous. I thought that, well, perhaps not ridiculous, but just a little bit out of tune, like her changing her career at the end to fit
becoming a car lease hire person,
yeah,
is a shocking scenario.
From
criminal law
like
to lease hiring cars, it's not a good shift.
It was just so random. It was like when she said it to his face in the court, and it was just so, some things felt so out of place for the sake of being hyperbolic, I thought. And that can make a good story, but I think when it's one based on a true story, it's a little less forgivable when it's so outlandish sometimes. But I thought that the acting was fine, and the story didn't play out the way I thought it would. I was surprised. I thought at first it was bad acting when he was like, I need to protect you guys, and then I realized he was lying. So that's fine. All good there, just a little bit ridiculous at some points, but perhaps I'd give it like a 6.5.
Yeah, I give it, it would have had a 7 for me had it not been for overuse of the F-bomb, you know, frankly. Yeah. You know, and as indeed others can actually attest to, I'm never a great fan of movie which features bodily fluids being ejected. And there's a couple of sequences where, you know, the vomit that comes out that I think, I don't need it. You might be a psychologist, but we don't need to see it. Okay, that's all. Yeah. So 6.5 for me. Other than that, perfectly okay. A bit like Roadkill. It's not Roadkill, but is that what we're actually seeing here in, of course, another movie featuring another one of your personal favourite characters, of course, Jessica Chastain. Again, I'm thinking maybe 6.5 to 7 for this one, but over to you, Richard.
Well, The Forgiven is a very, very intriguing movie, because I say it's a very good one, but what's very sad is there was an opportunity here to make a really great film, and they've blown that, which is a pity. The director is John Michael McDonough, and he has a cast to die for, because it's an intriguing movie, because I don't recognize it by what I'm looking at. It's a different Forgiven, Alex. The Forgiven is with Ralph Fiennes and Jessica Chastain.
It's 400 miles to Asna.
Long way to go for a party.
Face it, David, we're lost.
That's the time.
No, it's not.
This is the time.
No, David.
Don't be so bloody stupid.
It was an accident. I stepped out in front of us. We don't want the police showing up, poking their noses into everything. You got into a car with a drunk, which makes you an accessory.
I feel like I've been an accessory for a long time now.
Now listen, are you going to Mobile Weekend, or are you going to enjoy yourself?
It's not about you enjoy yourself, you know.
I suppose I can make the effort.
Sit was Nacht will die.
Did he mention money?
No. He wants you to return with them to bury the boy. It is customary in his parts.
People disappear here. They just vanish.
What did you do with this ID? Bury it.
They didn't just hit him. They ran over him. Maybe more than once. What did they call it in our country?
Roadkill.
There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide.
Has it occurred to you that he might actually be planning something a lot nastier than anything you can anticipate?
You've forgotten about my husband.
Yes, I have. And so have you.
Why did you come here?
Well, that's okay, Richard. I've just chose a different sort of title for the whole sequence. And it doesn't matter at the end of the day. I don't think I'll be releasing the video.
This is literally, it's just, it's only just out. And I was looking forward to this movie because they are two absolutely first-class performers. Now, Ralph Fiennes plays David Henning. He's an alcoholic doctor, and he appears to be someone who's superficial, thoroughly nasty, bigoted and racist, and generally obnoxious. And he and his wife, Jo, played by Jessica Chastain, they go on different journeys of self-discovery in this movie, and that is one of the things that makes it riveting. They are driving initially to the desert residence of Richard Galloway, played by Matt Smith, who played Prince Philip in The Crown, the first series, and second, and also his partner Dally, played by Caleb Landry-Jones. They are throwing a party for their European friends at a spectacular residence in the desert. The couple, that is Richard and Joe, are clearly estranged. He gets drunk at the wheel, he's speeding, he argues with his wife, and then he happens to knock over accidentally, but kills a young man, Driss, played by Omar Jahoui, Driss's father, Abdullah Tahiri, played by Ismail Kanateer, arrives to collect his son's body, and here is the main and slightly macabre twist to it. He insists that David, the Ray Fiennes' character, accompanies him to his son's burial in a Berber community. Now, obviously, firstly, you've got Joe, who's just dying to see the back of her husband. Secondly, you've got Richard Galloway, the host, who certainly doesn't want his party interrupted. He's irritated enough by what's happened, and he realises that although the police aren't going to pursue it, there have been some ambiguities of behaviour, which there most certainly have been. So when David Henning does go with the father to the burial, he anticipates he'll put the whole thing behind him. Very different things occur. And Rafe finds his performance as a dissolute individual whose moral compass starts to return with startling results is superb. I mean, I think an Oscar nomination here is coming, and I hope so, because I've seen Fiennes, I mean, on stage.
He's never bettered his role as John Steed in the 1997 version of The Avengers.
Well, I would suggest that The God of Carnage, where he plays someone who's on the mobile phone for almost the entire time, and it's when the phone is taken from him and strange things happen to it, the audience bursts into a roar of applause. I've never forgotten it. And also as Coriolanus, I didn't get tickets, unfortunately, but I did see the film of it. Very good. No, he gives a remarkable performance. For character metamorphoses in ways you would believe. As for Jessica Chastain, also superb. It's mainly about his journey, but also a fascinating performance from her. Splendid support, too, from the actors who play the tribesmen and the staff at the residence, the subtitle.
People dialogue. Might recall Matt Smith with better fondness from Doctor Who as opposed to The Crown, Richard. I'm just saying.
You may be right. That I cannot comment on. There's a particularly fine performance by Ismail Kanata as Driss's grief-stricken father. Very, very impressive. And visually, it's fantastic, because whenever you have a film in the desert, and there have been quite a large number, Lawrence of Arabia, The Wind and the Lion, The Sheltering Sky.
The English Patient.
Absolutely. Yes. Stunning, lurid colours in the movie. Desert backgrounds draw us in. Very often, individuals are held captive. They change with the moods of the desert. But here is the one which doesn't and isn't necessary because it's overdone. The film wishes to point out the obvious distance between the decadent, the uncaring and sybaritic nature of the Europeans, empty lives, one long party, the caricatures of camp hosts by Matt Smith and Caleb Landry-Jones.
We can't all be Boris and Carrie, Richard.
These are caricature gay characters, and I haven't seen a couple like them for quite a long time, and suspect that I won't for quite a long time. And their most prestigious guest, Lord Swansorn, played by Alex Jennings, I think he's largely wasted. The problem is you've got, from their moronic cultural appropriation, I mean, they're poisonous creatures, and they're too obviously contrasted with the dignity and simplicity of the Berbers. So, you know, you've got white mischief in Morocco. But having said that, it's a fascinating film. It's got a central theme, which, as I say, of self-discovery, and it's cast.
Does it match the wonderment of Dorothy L'Amour, Bing Crosby and Bob Hope in Roads to Morocco? That's what we need to know.
Saw it and wouldn't want to. But it gets 8. It would have got 10 if you'd had a more restrained portrayal of guests who, I mean, every single camera angle is supposed to emphasize what we know already. But having said that, some very fine, there's much to enjoy here.
Much use of the F-bomb, Richard?
No comment, Alex.
Sarah, one for you?
Yes. I mean, I don't know whether I don't want to spoil it. I haven't seen it, but what I took from the trailer was, you can't run away from things. Eventually, you've got to stand up and say for your own, to look yourself in the eye.
Just like the Duchess of Sussex.
Oh, stop going. We've agreed we're not speaking about her anymore. yes, I'm very intrigued by that because I think that's a very true thing. Ralph Fiennes, actually, I watched on Netflix because I'm doing boring jobs down here and wanted something on. I watched in The Constant Gardener, which is another fantastic film. And I saw him recently in Straight Line Crazy at the Bridge, a new David Herb play. So he's very clever, and I think he's very good at playing these sorts of parts where there's three or four levels going on within the character of what he should be doing. I definitely got from the trailer, which Richard was then making me realise it's what it's about, is the privilege of people and the entitlement that people think they have. Sorry, we're getting back to you.
Again, back to the Duchess of Sussex. Yeah.
And the, ultimately, I think one of the themes when I watch this film will be, you know the expression, if you can get up in the morning and look yourself in the eye, you're all right. Well, I think that's what this film's about. And I think we all need to do that with everything that's going on in the world. So yes, I think it's going to be quite fascinating. And I would give this, if I was scoring, not that I score, because you two are the scorers, but I would definitely give this a little bit of a higher mark than the previous one in how I would view it. Yeah.
Kaylee.
Yeah, I've heard apparently that it doesn't offer any original insight into entitlement and privilege, and white privilege specifically. And apparently it's quite, the portrayals of characters are quite interesting and unoriginal. So on that basis alone, perhaps I won't. But I think it's quite a stellar cast, so they've got that right at least, and it definitely will entice people to watch on that alone. But the premise itself, I think there is so much media out there on privilege, as has been discussed, people refusing to admit to their mistakes and to face what they've done wrong in the face of perhaps racism or just superiority. So
in the words of some of the IMDb reviews, not satisfying for fans of the novel, film has a forced wokeness that is more complex than the novel, generally scoring, I think, around about 5.9 as far as the sequence is actually concerned. That's presumably before it's adjusted in all sorts of other areas. Best review I can find, a well-crafted yet bloated with pretentious melodramatics film. Pretentious melodramatics.
I'll always watch a film, regardless of the rating that it's given. So that wouldn't put me off. It's more watching it and watching the trailer and just kind of assuming what it's going to be about and assuming the portrayals that we're going to face, you know. But maybe I'll watch it one day and perhaps I'll be wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong.
And given, of course, his fascination for the royals, I'm astonished, Richard, you haven't got anything to say about the first two episodes of the most expensive series Amazon Prime have ever launched on us, with Sir Lenny Henry portraying an Irish half-foot, and a whole range of other factors which you say would be questionable in, of course, the Rings of Power. Is that not one for you? Are you not a sort of fan of the opening of J.R.R. Tolkien's fantastic work and so on? Or is it a case of, no, Harry Potter was always for me, and when it comes to Hobbits, I've had enough?
Well, when it comes to Game of Thrones, there's always the prequel, and I have got it there too.
House of Dragons, yeah.
Absolutely. The dragon was what, I have to say, the colourful, spectacular nature of it. It is rather addictive. But so far as the Lord of the Rings and so far as...
The Rings of Power.
The Rings of Power. I mean, yes, I would like to see it. I saw a terrible review, etc. Just happened to see the top of it. So obviously it hasn't pleased everybody. I do think these movies are... These series are very, very entertaining. I certainly was much entertained by, I can only say, bits of Game of Thrones. I did see quite a lot of it, but there were huge numbers of episodes. There's no way I would have time for it all. But I think they bring an enormous amount of pleasure. I'm all for them. I simply, you know, it's a question of trying to catch up when you're doing the Royals and you're doing movies and you're doing a bit of PR. Well,
the good news, so Richard, is at least we have got an unknown actor cast as Kate in the upcoming version of The Crown, which, as people know, is Peter Morgan's truly accurate, 100% accurate portrayal of the House of Windsor, the wicked House of Windsor, as we can obviously refer to them these days.
Oh, yeah, yes, you're right, Alex. In fact, it portrays them very much in series 3 and 4. I had a Faustian pact with The Crown. I've always been frank about it. The first two series had some fabulous performances.
With Claire Foy, and Sarah is in Foy at present. It just shows the synchronicity.
Well, Claire Foy was marvellous as the Queen in the early years. And
Olivia Colman?
John Lithgow as Churchill, magic, an American. And also Alex Jennings as the Duke of Windsor. And so I mean, there was so much to admire, and Morgan does have skill, as we saw in the Queen and we saw in the audience on stage, of having the royals and the political and merging them into something fascinating, and the production values were excellent. But it did take gross liberties.
Helena Bonham Carter.
No. Well, yes. Well, I mean, Princess Margaret, indeed. The problem was that, particularly in series 3 and 4, but it was evident in the early part too, that they took liberties, and it was obvious that an agenda started to creep in, which was simply Morgan compared the monarchy to a virus in an interview. And I mean, to say that you can invent drama for dramatic, or at least you can invent events for dramatic effects, but you must never desert truth and then do precisely that. Well, as far as the next two series are concerned, and I will be watching these, frankly, the 1990s, which is where most of the 20 episodes are bound to be set, it was so awful for the royals. You don't need Shirley to make anything up. But
if it makes money, Richard, it's the important thing. However, I can actually reveal some very good sources have informed me that the Richard Fitzwilliam story, a biopic actually based upon your good self, Richard, is actually up and running now. The casting has actually been put forward. And in true fashion, the leading contender to actually take on board your role, Richard, is indeed none other than, yes, Meghan herself. She's put in for the whole thing. Meghan Markle as Richard Fitzwilliams. This will be the epic. I think it's due for 2025, 2026, when they're actually working through on that process. So you must feel very privileged, Richard, to actually have yourself portrayed by Meghan on screen in a way which certainly deals with intersectional politics in an appropriate manner.
It indeed, Alex. I have to say, I'm deeply touched. I'm fascinated too. I see no contradiction in the casting at all.
It's the South African connection, as we started the whole process with. So there we have it. Sarah Huntley, Kayleigh Mansell, Richard Fitzwilliams, Natasha Wanton, we send our best to. She's having family matters at present, so she couldn't join us today. And likewise, Kathy Manso, currently in Ukraine, doing wonderful things there. So well done, Kathy. The aforementioned Kayleigh, Sarah and Richard, keep watching the movies.
angels dancing in the deepest oceans to sing in the water. You're just like a dream. You're just like a dream. Lift me into shape. I must have been asleep for days. Moving lips to breathe her name. I opened up my eyes and found myself alone, alone, alone above a raging sea. Stole the only girl I loved and drowned her deep inside of me. You knew, soft and lonely. Lost and lonely, you look just like heaven.
Clean energy. It is the state of the future. We've heard lots of talk about wanting to go for net zero and so on and so forth. And indeed, findings suggest that 2/3 of secondary school pupils and university students want a career that has a positive impact on the world and society. So to talk us through one possible area to work within, i.e. offshore energies, we're delighted to welcome the Workforce Engagement and Skills Manager from Offshore Energies UK. That's a wonderful Alex Tom. How are you, Alex?
I'm good. Thank you very much for having me on, Alex.
Excellent. Now, one of the key things about this particular survey is that people want to make a difference. They want to make a change and so on. So talk us through why offshore energies may well be one possible route to pursue.
There are so many opportunities. I mean, we're very, very pleased by the outcome of the survey that so many young people, we shouldn't be surprised, but it was very gratifying, but that they want to make a difference. And coming into offshore energies is a real fantastic way to do that. Our background is oil and gas, but our member companies are diversifying and leading actually in the energy transition space as we develop into carbon capture and storage, hydrogen production, offshore wind, particularly floating offshore wind. All of our member companies and our workforce are starting to transition into those areas, and they are absolutely crucial to decarbonising our economy going forward, which we see as a key role for us.
And that's one of the key things, because as you mentioned, the Offshore Energies UK, it's the leading trade body for the UK's integrating offshore energies industry. Perhaps a lot of people are thinking, oh, yes, yeah, it's all about fossil fuels. That's what's doing the damage and so on and so forth. But it's this transition, as you said, which is fairly critical, which presumably has one heck of a range of opportunities for both secondary school students and indeed university graduates to consider entering.
The opportunities are massive. And if you can think of a role you might be interested in, you will find it in the energy sector. So, for example, if we think about traditional roles like engineering, project management, technicians, skilled workers, absolutely crucial to the existing energy sector and will be going forward. And not just in our sector, but there's so much competition for those skills in, for example, national infrastructure projects going on. But there are also going to be new roles. So, for example, we need more people with digital skills, people who are interested in research and development of automation and remote operations, cybersecurity. We're growing the number of environmental scientists in the sector. The range is massive. You can be a helicopter pilot, you can be a chef, you can be a lawyer, you can be an industrial photographer. There's so much scope in the huge and growing offshore energy sector.
Mm. Were you encouraged, Alex, by the kind of findings of the survey that were conducted? That actually it suggests that maybe we have got a future because our young people are very concerned about the environment? Or did you think, yeah, we kind of knew this in any case?
I wouldn't say we knew that. I think as a sector, we often beat ourselves up because there's so much noise around climate issues and often focused on fossil fuels. We were pleasantly surprised and greatly encouraged. But But as I say, maybe we shouldn't be surprised because young people have always been able to surprise us.
Yeah. And where can people actually go to find out further details about Offshore Energies UK and the kind of things we've been talking about as far as career options are concerned?
So you can find out more about the offshore energies sector from our website, oeuk.org.uk. You can also, there are careers websites like My Energy Future, the Engineering Construction Industry Training Board is another great place to visit, and Skills Development Scotland. All of these will lead you on your the start of your journey into a very exciting sector.
And just finally, Alex, in terms of the entry levels, I mean, we talk about obviously secondary school folk with A levels and SQA exam results in Scotland, likewise graduates and so on. Are there kind of various steps of career progression depending on what your entry level qualifications happen to be?
There are. And what I would say is whatever your entry qualifications are, there are opportunities. We're really pushing to encourage more apprenticeships, for example, and that's not just in our energy sector. That's an issue for a UK PLC. So you can come in from leaving school, or if you wish, there are a whole range and suite of degrees that you can go on to do before you choose to enter our sector.
Sounds excellent. Alex Thomas, Alex with an I, curiously, as opposed to E, which is interesting from that point of view. But Alex Tom, Workforce Engagement and Skills Manager for Offshore Energies UK. Huge thanks. And as we often say, keep up the excellent work.
Thank you very much.
Bullying. It's not great at any particular time. And hopefully one day in society, we'll actually have a zero tolerance procedure when it comes to bullying and so on. But when you actually see a recent report that suggests that the children of parents that were bullied at school are more likely to experience the same trauma, clearly we've got a long way to go to address this particular issue. And we're delighted to welcome to the programme today fabulous Alex Holmes to talk a bit about that. Alex, share with us your own particular involvement with this particular area as far as bullying is concerned, this campaign that Nationwide Building Society are looking to put together.
Yeah, absolutely. We've teamed up with Nationwide Building Society to do the big anti-bullying assembly, which will be beamed into schools on the 3rd of October. 10 million children are just about to go back to school, and unfortunately for a lot of them, bullying is something that they face. And we know that, unfortunately, that experience of bullying has a real psychological impact on them and can stay with them into adulthood. So we're producing this assembly, which is full of positive techniques and advice and inspiration for young people in schools to think about how they can look after each other, support each other, and make a much more respecting and respectful community and school environment. We're really excited about it. We've got some big celebrities part of it. And the research suggests that this is a really important issue and one that, as you say, isn't going away.
Alex, you're the Deputy Chief Executive Officer of the Diana Awards. I mean, clearly, we're still looking back over the tragedy all those years ago with respect to this. This is something clearly which kind of impacts on the whole system and, again, hopefully serves as a legacy to actually ensure that we can get to a zero tolerance position within the bullying scenario.
Absolutely. And the Diana Award was set up originally as an award. I myself received it many years ago for starting a bullying program as a result of my own impact of being bullied at school, and I received the Diana Awards. And yes, it was the 25th anniversary of her death. I think.
Sorry, I was just going to go so briefly going on to Paul Hibbs, who's also with us. Paul, you're head of advertising at Nationwide Building Society. Again, presumably this is something else which, I mean, were you surprised by these findings? I mean, some of the sort of things that come there, 58%, over half of parents nervous about their child being bullied going back to school in September. 84%, as we said, of parents who are bullied at school say their own children are going through a similar experience. We still seem to have a long way to go in this particular line of not just tolerance, but hopefully ensuring that, you know, we can respect each other as human beings.
Yeah, you're right. Whether I was surprised or not, I'm saddened, really. You know, as a parent myself, I've got to say, I think anyone who's got children in school probably has these fears, because we know the impact bullying can have, both in the short term and the long term. And the last thing any of us parents want is having our children feel excluded or left out or emotionally or physically harmed. So it is one of the biggest worry beads, I think, for any parent. So, and yeah, I think there is still some way to go. And we're on that journey with Alex and his team at the Diana Award to try our best to train as many anti-bullying ambassadors in primary schools as we can, in the hope that if we can instill the sort of values of kindness and respect as young as possible in our children, that as they grow older, they'll carry those values through to them and hopefully build a more respectful society.
Now, this obviously comes ahead of the third annual big anti-bullying assembly, which is going to be held across the country. And so it's going to be broadcast to primary school classrooms and homes across the country on Monday, the 3rd of October. Alex, is this again something where a statement can clearly be made to, again, with celebrity endorsement, really address the whole notion that, you know, bullying is wrong, it's always wrong, there's never any justification for it, and it needs to be ended?
Absolutely. We feel with the big anti-bullying assembly and working with Nationwide Bullying Society, we can really send that clear message that it's important to think about mutual respect and how we can look after each other. And I think the celebrities being part of this does make a real difference, because a lot of young people will look up to some of these names. We've got Marvel actor Will Poulter. We've got some CBBC stars and EastEnders Sean McGarty. And I think that makes a real difference when you see role models or celebrities displaying the sort of behaviour that we want to see, reinforcing this idea that bullying's not okay and that we should all be making a stand against it and thinking about how we treat each other.
Absolutely. And Paul, how can people find out more details about this? Where can they go to online about the assembly, and indeed how Nationwide are actually supporting and partnered with the Diana Award in terms of this?
Yeah, you can register for the Big Anti-Bullying Assembly at www.thebiganti-bullyingassembly.com. Teachers, parents, can help promote it within their schools. In the last few years, this is our third one, as we say, and combined in the last 2 years, we've had over 3 million children watching it and pledging to stand up against bullying. So the more we can do to help more people get involved with that, the better. And Nationwide will continue to work with the Diana Award. And our ambition is to train 10,000 anti-bullying ambassadors by the middle of next year across schools across the whole of the UK.
Well, let's hope that in some way, shape or form, we've at least addressed that so far today. For the moment, though, Paul Hibbs from Nationwide Building Society and, of course, Alex from Deputy Chief Executive of the Diana Awards. Huge thanks, and keep up the excellent work. And let's hope in a few years' time we won't have need for this, because people will realise that bullying, frankly, is not good, it's not clever, and it should stop right now.
Thanks, Alex.